You may listen or you may follow along in your Bibles. We'll be reading the two passages that are listed in the bulletin. Carl will be taking his message from these. I found them fascinating. They are familiar, yet there are new things for each of us to be learning. First one is found in Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 to 17. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you are called to peace. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, and as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, whether it is in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Turning over to Luke 2, starting at verse 41 through the end of the chapter. Every year, his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were not aware of it. Thinking he was within their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and answering their questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Blessings to Carl as he comes to lead us.
Lighting the Christ candle, reminding us the focus of our season and the point that we are at in our Advent journey. Focusing on Christ this morning. Love Revealed. Title of the message this morning. An adage that I came across this week that's a helpful reminder for the times that we are living in. If our lives are ruled by fear, we will make innocent people our enemies. If our lives are ruled by love, we can make strangers our friends. Love Revealed is the title of the message this morning tells us on this first Sunday after our Christ Mass. We are reflecting on the truth that love, capital L, love, is something that is revealed. At least that is how I interpreted that title I was given. That love is something that is revealed, and it's what I want to invite us to consider this morning. Love's not a cognitive construct, something that we can bring into being by thinking about or studying it. Love is not something that we can force into being, ever. Love is not something I can convince you of. Rather, love is felt. Love is experienced. Love emerges. Love is revealed in relationship. And that is what these two seemingly disconnected texts have in common this morning. They speak to the relational nature of love. Love emerges, love is revealed in relationships. Our Colossians passage speaks to what it takes to be in community with others, to live corporately together as the body of Christ that we are called to be and that we say we are and that we attempt to be. And after Paul names all of the attributes we need to clothe ourselves with, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with each other, forgiving one another. After he names those attributes that we're to clothe ourselves with, he names the fact that what holds all of these things together and what makes them possible is clothing ourselves in love. Now, each of these attributes could be its own sermon, of course, way too much material for us here today, but I included even a second of the four suggested texts for this morning, and that is this one from Luke 2, and have actually decided to spend most of our time in it, in this story, this narrative that we have of Jesus at about age 12. A fascinating, unusual story that highlights this foundational importance of the relationship it looks into. Likely the most complex human relationship any of us will ever experience, the parent-child relationship. If love is revealed in relationship, many of our understandings of love, our feelings of being loved or not, grows and is shaped by that parent-child relationship. Now, this is the only story of Jesus' childhood recorded in our canon of scriptures. There are some extra canonical stories that are out there, but the only one that made it into our canon that was agreed upon by the early church was this one. There's only one story from his birth narrative that we've been spending the last weeks moving towards and celebrating over this past week. And his adult ministry, there's this 30-ish year gap. This is the only story that we have. And it's included only by Luke, the only possibly non-Jewish writer in our New Testament, who, if we accept him also as the writer of Acts, wrote over a third of the New Testament text. Luke did, more than anyone else. And it seems noteworthy that the self-proclaimed orderly account writer is the only one who thought it important to include some human backstory to the adult Jesus that the other gospel writers portray. And perhaps that's partly the point of not many backstories of childhood Jesus. There's not backstory, perhaps, to adult Jesus. Perhaps it means that the story of Jesus is actually more about revealing God and revealing something other than who Jesus was as he was growing up. Jesus' purpose in coming. We skip from the infancy narrative to the adult narrative because something about his life revealed who God is, what love is. And the other thing that Luke provides us in this story, other than this one picture into parent-child relationships and into Jesus' childhood, that is insight into the realities of parenting that are evidently both timeless and universal. Because as I was drawing some of these realities of parenting and the parent-child relationship out of this story this morning, I realized that, okay, this is about a young 12-year-old Jewish boy in ancient Palestine, but there's a lot going on here that I can relate to as a child and a parent. So let's try to enter into this story from the human perspective of one of the characters, perhaps. I'm going to invite you, maybe even, well, I will be focusing on, and what I'm sharing this morning is the one human perspective or character within this story that I connected most with, and that is the parents. But the beautiful thing about stories, and why I'm glad Luke at least invited or included one story here, is stories invite us into reflecting on the different perspectives of the stories. So maybe you feel more drawn to young Jesus in this story. Or maybe you feel more drawn to the religious leaders in the temple. There are other implied characters, the crowd of people that Mary and Joseph were traveling back with, that they left and went back to Jerusalem on their own. Whatever catches your attention, spend time later with this story, perhaps, thinking about how that character connects with you and your experience in life. But as I said, for what I'm sharing, I'm relating to the parents most deeply this morning. It's kind of where I'm at in life at this point. It's been said that there are no perfect children or perfect parents. We can, however, be good enough. We will make parenting mistakes, but we can love and teach our children in ways they know that they are loved no matter what. And that will be good enough. Whether or not we ourselves here this morning, as you as a member here this morning, as we sit together reflecting on this text, whether or not you find yourself as a parent, we all here this morning are children of parents. And we know how complex and tricky that relationship is. How many of us have said at some point in our life, probably when we were fairly young, when I'm a parent, I'm never going to, you fill in the blank. It was probably something your parents had just done or something they had just did again, like they always do. When I'm a parent, I'm never going to. And how many of us who became parents now cringe to remember that we said that? Ever feel like eating those words or realizing you are eating those words as other words come out of your mouth? And one of the hardest lessons, I think, to learn and hold on to as parents is that children, each child, is their own person. And we cannot and should not control who they become and what path they follow. We can try, but it generally won't work. Turn of the century, last century, 20th century, Lebanese American poet Khalil Gibran says it as only a poet can. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of God. They came through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of God. They came through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. In this story that Luke shares with us that we are focusing on this morning, Mary and Joseph learn that the hard way, by forgetting that. Now, we on this side of history, looking back and reading into this text, bring all kinds of understandings with us, and we know that of all complex parent-child relationships, probably Mary and Joseph's and Jesus's had to be more complex than even any that we can relate to, right, on so many different levels. But we see here Mary and Joseph being the very human parents they are, and Jesus being the mostly human son that he was in these interactions. Peter Woods, someone whose writing I read this week, a pastor who calls himself the listening hermit, says this about his learning about being a parent. He says, over the past 25 years, I have learned the truth of this saying, of Khalil Gibran's saying about children not being our children. As I have tried not to be my son's controller, dictator, policeman, moralist, publicist, nor garbage disposal unit. In fact, learning to be not the perfect parent, but the good enough parent is what taught me so much about God's parenting. Mary and Joseph begin their school of good enough parenting in this story this morning that we're looking at by learning the following lessons. Children are never really lost, and children find their true home despite us. I like those two learnings that he pulls out of this story, and I want to focus on them. That children are never really lost, and that children find their true home despite us. In this parent-child relationship that we all navigate as a parent or child, where love is revealed, we, perhaps as children, can name that we're never really lost, even though our parents thought we were sometime along the way, and that we find our true home in God, from who we truly come, despite our parents, as much as because of them. Children, he says, are never really lost. They're just on their own path. Can you relate to that? Do we know, can we relate to Mary and Joseph when they realize suddenly that Jesus is not with them? They're going along on their way back to Nazareth, leaving Jerusalem after their annual trip there, assuming that Jesus was just following along with them, right? As any good child would do. Suddenly they realize he's not with them. This is a wake-up call for them as parents. The one that we all must learn, the lesson we all must learn, that our children are under no obligation to follow the path that we have chosen for ourselves. Now me, I would want to think that, come on, wouldn't the world be a lot better place if everyone, my kids included, thought like me, valued the things that I valued, followed the path that I'm following? Even Jesus' parents, maybe especially Jesus' parents, had to wake up to that. But so do we. That our children are under no obligation to follow the path that we have chosen. We can shape them in it, and I'm not saying we shouldn't. We can teach them the path, but they are under no obligation. They are their own persons. They are their own children of their parents. parent God. Peter, this pastor who I was reading, also resonates with something else in this story, and that is the shame-blame game that Mary tries to lay on Jesus when he's found in the temple. Even down to the way that she tries to triangle Joseph onto her side of the power play, when she says, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." Pretty familiar scene, right? Or maybe my family of origin, or even my own current family, or all of our families of origins, right? Maybe we're not alone in seeing this kind of blame and shame game being played out. It's what's most effective in the moment sometimes as parents, we feel, right? Now, it's not that parenting, again, does not involve the formation of young lives. Not that we aren't to try to form them, because that, of course, is part of our role. But from this story that we see of Jesus and his parents this morning, perhaps we can take the truth that this formation must be done with deep respect and discernment for the destiny that our children's heavenly parent has for them. Again, think how complicated Mary and Joseph's understanding of how they were parents to Jesus must have been. But it is no less true for us as children or as parents of the fully earthly and human nature, that there must be deep respect and discernment for the destiny that that a child's heavenly parent has for them. Their destiny might be very different from our own. Their calling might be very different from our own. Their purpose in life, their identity, their personality, we all know those things are probably very different than our own as parents. And yet we find it hard to remember as we're shaping and leading them along their path in life that we must remember that, we must respect that, that their heavenly parent, the love that created them, has a distinct, unique plan and path for them. How does that make us feel? I'm speaking for myself as a parent. As parents, how does it make us feel? To know that we need to deeply respect the destiny that our children have and that God has for them. Lots of counseling sessions happen because children are trying to work through the feeling that they've let their parents down, or that their parents don't somehow approve of them. Jesus, in this story, lets his parents down, right? It's evidently a universal human experience to let our parents down. But perhaps what we need as parents to be let down from is our delusions or illusions of how perfect and conforming our children should be. Perhaps they don't need to follow us back to Nazareth. It might not mean that they are lost. They're simply finding their own destined home, maybe even closer to God's heart than we are. Which leads us to that second lesson that we can learn from this story of this holy family, that children find their true home despite us. Predestination, this Pastor Peter says, has always been a hard notion for him to get his head around. I would agree. The idea that God has it all planned and determined from before our birth feels mechanistic and manipulative and controlling in a way that I don't understand God to be. And in fact, parenting, if it doesn't teach us anything else, should teach us the impossibility, maybe even, of predestination. That we can't determine in a predetermined way who our children will become and who they're going to be. There's this amazing grace that is within a relationship with children who are not forced or manipulated into loving one as the parent. Think about our relationship with God and the way that we understand agape love, who God is. There is no coercion, no force, no manipulation within that kind of love. We can relate to what a relationship feels like when there is manipulation, when there is expectations or force being used to define who we are to be in that relationship. It doesn't feel free, does it? Such a relationship, in fact, would be an experience of oppression, even. But we know that we as humans are all individual. God created us each individuals. We each have unique needs, unique gifts, unique personalities. And it is the freedom with which God acknowledges that and allows us to live into who we are that most fully allows us to become who God has created us to be and calls us to be. The same outcome, perhaps, or the outcome, perhaps, is not different, but the means of getting there is. It's not a forced or a manipulative way of shaping someone into who we believe they are to be, but it is, in fact, trusting God in their lives, trusting them as creations of God, giving them freedom to become who they are that allows them to most perfectly become who they're created to be. Perfection. It's not a part of human life, is it? And yet, in God's understanding, in God's created order, perhaps everything is perfect. Even those things that we think are imperfect, that we think are broken or wrong. Sometimes there is very harmful or imperfect or wrong things, that experiences that happen to us or happen in our lives. But within God's economy, God is able to even redeem those things into good and into beauty. It's called integration. God integrates everything in our lives, the good and the bad, the imperfect and the perfect, for our good and out of love for us. Being a parent teaches us to trust God's unconditional love for us. Being a child who is loved unconditionally is what allows a child to stay connected to their heavenly parent, to God who loves them and created them in love. We see in this back and forth dialogue between Jesus and Mary, in this story of parents and children in conflict, Jesus saying back to Mary, after Mary tried the shame and blame game, "Why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." He simply says, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" At the moment, anyway, they did not understand what he was saying to them. We see here this differentiation that's happening at about age 12 for Jesus. Maybe that's why this one story is included. It's a necessary process between parents and children for this differentiation to happen. It's also one of the most painful things many times for parents to see happening or to allow to happen. But it must, right? We who have become our own people, who were children of parents who did a better or worse job of allowing us to differentiate, we eventually became our own persons, right? Some of us perhaps are more or less still tied to our parents in their views or thoughts about us. But for that relationship to be the most healthy, especially in as a child becomes an adult, there must be that differentiation. That must be respected, going both directions, if we are going to maintain a healthy relationship. Jesus said to his mother Mary, "I had to be in my Father's house." Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. Encapsulated story. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Something shifted in their relationship, I'm guessing. Something massively shifted in their relationship during this experience, this event in the temple. Mary now went home with a different understanding of who her son was, treasured these things in her heart, and because she had this new understanding, because she was able to perhaps release him to a further degree than she had before, Jesus was able to grow in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and all those around him. Fascinating story we've spent some time with this morning, a fascinating story that illuminates truths about our relationship with our parents, a parent's relationship with their children, and all of our relationship with God. Over all the virtues of a parent, of a child, of humans in relationship, of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, peace, forbearance, and forgiveness, put on love. Allow love to be revealed so that our true self can be revealed, who God has created us to be. Give it space. Give a person space to grow, and God will allow them to grow. Just invite you to reflect with me for a moment, or offer a word of prayer on what God might be speaking to you even in these few words that were spoken this morning. God, you have spoken to me as I prepared for sharing this message this morning. I have now spoken and tried to share some of what you were speaking to me and revealing to me out of your love for me this morning. Pray that at least some of the words that I have said might be helpful in you continuing your speaking to all of us here this morning. God, we are thankful for the ways that you show your love for us, that your love is revealed to us through the freedom that you give us to be and to become who we truly are. For us to find our true home in you, the source of love, that created our lives. God, thank you for the love that we see revealed in the story of Jesus and in this glimpse into his childhood this morning. May we more fully understand how it is that you love us as your children. Allow us as your children to live out your love to all those around us, our parents, our children, children of others, so that love can grow and be revealed through us. Amen.